Blog Talk Radio.
Sexy Radio, and here we are again on this Tuesday doing our thing, and we are happy to be here, although there's a lot of things going on here in Missouri, as you probably have been seeing on TV. A lot of you have been watching what's going on in Ferguson. Yeah, we know that's a lot of ill will. We'll be talking about that later, and anybody wants to call in, the number is 917 888-989-8206. This is Word 60 Radio, and we will be talking to you about all the things we want to. But right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to check out the lines and see who we got. I got a 910 area code. State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Divine Six from Fayetteville, North Carolina.
And how you doing, Miss Divine Six?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. I can barely hear you, though, but it might be my side of the story, though. But we're glad that you can be here, and we're going to also have Draka Armstrong. She's supposed to be coming in. We'll see if she'll show up. And we also got all these other people that's here. The chat room is open. And I understand that you have been doing a lot of you're a hot item right now. You've been doing a lot of videos, and well, not videos, but interviews, I must say.
Yeah.
So
you
was doing an interview the other day, and you said you was scared. What was the problem?
I was a little nervous because it was my first interview concerning my book and everything like that.
Okay, so are you nervous now?
Nah, I think I got it now. Like, I've been hyping myself up all day for the show.
Well, let me tell you, probably when you did that show, you had some pre-asked questions that you had to answer, I'm sure, right?
He had a couple of different authors on there, and so the one author that was before me, he asked me the same questions, because he asked us all the same questions, so I kind of, you know, had my answers ready for him.
Okay,
but,
well, guess what? Tonight,
I know,
you're shooting from the hip, because Word 60 don't do that. We don't send out letters. We say what the fuck we want to, so I want you to relax and be yourself and do your thing. How about that? So let me bring in my co-host, DV, and we're gonna make you feel as comfortable as possible. DV, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, man? Good evening, ladies.
Just trying to stay out of the police way in Ferguson.
Oh, man.
You know, that's 3.5 hours from where, that's 3.5 hours from where I live. And the cops are rough, as we know. So if anybody's listening, any cops listening, don't be trying to come and arrest me. But anyway, let's go ahead and go forward. We got Miss Adulteress Divine Six on right now, and I think we're going to be having Draka on here in a few minutes. Let me see if this is her right here. 901 area code. State your name. Where you calling from?
It's Memphis.
Yeah, it is. Who is this? If you're just listening, don't hang up. We can turn your mic off. That's not a problem. All right, we'll keep going. Okay, so DB, as you know, we've been seeing that. And we're gonna, I want you to say hello to Miss Divine Six, and we're going to get started on her interview. And I just wanted her to know that our interview is different from any others that she's done, and she had some pre-asked questions before. We don't do that shit here on Word 60 Radio, so go ahead.
Not even close. We welcome you to the show. I'm pretty sure, you know, Red has already laid down pretty much the law for Word 60, so... just be prepared to be surprised.
There you go.
I've called in. Yeah, I've been, when you had my publisher, when you had Jade on here, I called in. So I remember how y'all
do
it.
Jade is off the chain. We love her. And I'm glad that she's coming back to write. I knew she wasn't going to stay away, especially when she had all these haters out there challenging her to come, you know, to do what she had to do. So she announced that she will be back in the scene with a few books that she had mentioned. And that's good. So let's go ahead and get you going, because we want to get you started. I don't know how long you're going to be here with us. Hopefully you'll be here the whole time. If not, then we understand.
Okay.
But So tell us a little bit about you. How did you get into the writing game, and what started you? Did you start when you were 2 years old? And like some of these authors always say, they started when they were five and shit. And they, you know, just tell us what
I knew I wanted to write
started when
I was my mama titty. Like, oh, really? That's truly special.
Well, actually,
that shit
actually,
fucks me up.
Did,
anyway, go ahead.
I won a short story contest way back when. We're not going to say how old I was when I did it, but I was a kid. And, like,
okay.
I always liked writing. I always liked telling stories, but I was never, like, let me be an author, let me do this, let me do that. It wasn't until 2011 when I went back to college after, you know, taking care of my family for so long, that I would get bored in between classes, so I started writing again. And a friend of mine was reading over my shoulder, and she's like, oh, that's really good. You should make it into a book. I'm like, okay, cool. If I make it into a book, will you read it? She said, yeah, I'll read it. So I wrote it. She read it, and she was like, you should publish it and see where it gets you. And so I did.
Right. Mm-hmm.
why is it that we always get started that way? It's always a friend who recommends that we do this. And then we're like, for real? It's like we don't see it in ourselves. It takes somebody else to see it in us before we get the will to be like, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So now you know what my question is going to be is, are you writing because your friend said you could, or are you doing it because you love it?
Oh, I've always loved writing. Writing has always been like a release for me. So
let me ask you this. Had she not told you or came to you and said, hey, won't you write this story, would you have think you went down the same path?
Probably so, because I got tired of reading the same damn book over and over again with different titles. And I would get so tired of seeing, you know, a lot of the same stuff and people putting out just repetitive-ass material. And I was like, you know what? Let me go ahead and do this, and let me try and do something just a little bit different.
Right. Okay, so tell us about your book. Is this your first novel, or have you been writing before and collaborating?
This is my second one.
Okay.
It's my second book.
Well,
the first one I – okay, I'm sorry.
The first book
is called Lady Vendetta, and I self-published that one. And, I mean, you know, I got pretty good reviews on it, and there was, you know, a couple people telling me that what they liked, what they didn't like, helped me, you know, make the next book that I decided to write better. And that was, like, just my start. But I approached Jade about her company, and I felt like with her, I was getting the best type of contract, the best kind of deal with her. So that's why I went ahead and went with her. And then when I was writing my second book, the way that the story came to me was that everybody always has a story, an urban fiction story about drugs, but they never talk about nothing else. It's always somebody's a big drug dealer. This is what happens to the big drug dealer. It's the same shit over and over again. So
yeah,
I figured I can write a book about drug dealers and drugs and all of that, but let that not be the whole focus of the book. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Like, I don't know.
Well, you know, like I said, it's always the story about the drug dealer goes to jail, he loses his woman, he loses his empire. Then the new drug dealer that was out there waiting while he was in jail took over and took his woman and everything.
Yeah,
and he comes out of jail and has to get all his shit back. That's just basically the same thing that we always see, isn't it?
Yeah. So I took it a different route. What I did was the wife was the one plotting on her own husband. She got tired of, you know, being seen and not heard. You know, she was just the trophy chick. You shut up, let me handle my business. You know, she never got in the middle of her husband's business. And she got tired of sitting back and not having a voice in nothing. So she plotted against her own husband. And she uses a DEA agent to help her put her husband in jail. And so the way that their family is, because the wife is Italian and the husband is Puerto Rican, they have, they're really strong about dishonor and, you know, everything. So
okay, I'm not laughing at you. I'm just, go ahead, continue. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at you. I just want you to know I'm not laughing at you. Okay.
No,
okay.
It's okay. But, you know, so basically the way of their family is, whoever you betray, that person has to kill you. And since her husband is in jail, he gives it to his daughter, his oldest daughter. So for a daughter to have to kill her mother, it's, you know, it's kind of like a tough thing. And it's more of a loyalty family thing, not the you stole my drug empire thing.
You stole my drug.
Okay, well, you know, that's an interesting story, very interesting. But what I advise you to do in the future is when you try to explain your stories or, you know, your plot of your books, don't give too much because now, you know, people will still read it still if they're interested, but you don't want to give too much because then they'll be like, well, fuck it, I don't have to read it now. She told me everything that's going on in the book.
Nah.
Yeah.
But, you know,
but my thing
like,
is,
yeah,
it's interesting, a different twist, what you did. Go ahead, Dee Dee.
No, you're right. Like, but... when you're excited about a book, man, the hardest thing to do is talk about it without talking about it, you know.
Right.
That's true.
That's a skill that you develop. But like I said, the easiest thing to do is just practice what you want to say in front of a mirror It's the hardest, you know, believe it's one of the hardest, easiest things to do. Because when you think about it, you're like, man, that sounds so easy. But when you're getting your speech together and, you're trying to say what you want to say, because people are going to want a 30-second synopsis. Yeah, that's pretty much,
right.
You know, when you're at a book show and you're telling people about your book, you cannot, you know, you can't tell them all of this. You give them a 30-second snippet of what your book is. And, you know, I spent literally years practicing in the mirror, you know, what I wanted to say about my book. And the worst thing is, because it's your book, it's the hardest thing to throw in the 30 seconds. So, you know, this is just stuff you're going to have to practice. If you ever plan on doing book shows or doing venues where, you know, you're going to run into book readers, I promise you, that just practicing in the mirror what you want to say, knocking out in 30 seconds will save your voice. Like, I've walked away from places just dead as a horse, and you know, and that's just from 30 seconds. Imagine if
and
you
the
know,
main thing is
45 or a minute.
Right. Main thing you want to do is save your book because you want them to read it. You want to make it so intriguing that they have to go and get it. You know, you might, you know, even if it's just reading the synopsis off the back, because I'm sure the synopsis, you didn't tell the story in the synopsis, right? So if you write a synopsis correctly, you don't want to give too much in the synopsis, just enough for them to intrigue them to want to read the book. So that's what you have to practice, what DV is talking about, practice, you know, in a mirror looking at, saying that piece so that you don't give away. Like, on the show tonight, it's great that you did that, but still, people will probably get it because it's a great story. What I'm hearing is different from some of the other urban fiction that I've heard because it's always the same thing. But to, you know, to tell the part about the daughter, that was a twist that you probably could have kept in to yourself or some of the things, you know. But my thing is I know you're excited, and it's your second book, and it's great and all that, and you continue to go head on with it, but... you know, are you planning on staying in this genre, or do you feel that you might branch off into other avenues of writing, or you know, urban fiction? Why did you pick that? Why did you pick that genre?
Because I got tired of the same stories, so I wanted to bring something different.
That's a good reason.
Yeah,
I'm just tired of the same thing just over and over again. The boy meets
and the reason why I say it's a good reason is because. A lot of times people just write because the first thing they'll say, well, I lived this life, and that's all I know. I can't write about nothing I don't know nothing about, and they ain't sold shit. They ain't killed nobody. They ain't done nothing. The shit that they talking about they did in the book, you know, it's just, you know, it's weird. But I understand. That's good. That's the reason why I got an erotica, because I was writing, I saw a lot of erotica out there. I was like, man, I can write this. That's why I started writing erotica, because I said, it doesn't seem as hard as what they try to make it seem like it is. So I tried it myself to show that I could. But I also wanted to write in other genres as well. And my thing is the reason why I was laughing earlier is because, you know, it's always, people always, you know, want to take the urban fiction and just, you know, take it to this level where, it's all the same, like you said, and I'm sure erotica is the same way, or any genre. If you do it enough, the same is all going to be kind of the same to a point.
Yeah,
so,
I see what you're saying.
For you to take it and twist it around and do something else like that or make it the way you did, and I'm not going to even repeat what you said because I want people to go get your book. But the thing is, go ahead, Dee Dee.
You're right. Like, Red is right. The one thing we always preach is to make whatever you write, make it yours. You know, do something different than what's been done. And some people take it the wrong way. They think, you know, if I write a story this way, you know, instead of having the drug dealer be the man, drug dealer be the woman, it's different. Like, no, that's not what we mean. You know,
still same plot. That's a different genre.
It's the exact same story, except you just put a woman there. The thing is, you went out and made the story yours. You didn't like, well, I had lived this life or somebody told me this story. You basically is like, okay, well, if I was a reader, what would I want to read about? And because you are a reader, you already had in your head the things that you didn't, the cliches and the run over 1,000 times, you know, stereotypes and archetypes. So, you know, I applaud you for that because, like you said, it's not about just anything. It's about making anything from your voice. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I like. You know, I try to take stuff differently. I mean, you can write about vampires, but you don't want to have the same thing going on in the book. So you can write about whatever. You just want to have it different, you know.
Yeah, I had to make it different because I got tired of that.
Yeah, and that's what it is. You know, you just got to, you know, whatever you do, just make it yours, like you said. And, you know, even if it is the same story, you should be able to tell it differently and make it so interesting that it doesn't seem like it's the same story, if that makes sense. That's what you want to do. And I have to get your book. I'm sorry. I apologize for not having read your book before you came on the show. I definitely need to get a copy of it so that I can take a look.
I sent you
because
one.
Okay, well, I'm going to take a look at the one you sent me.
I did.
You know, I get so many books. I'm sorry. I know it's a one-one, but anyway, look, I get so much, and a lot of times I don't get a chance to read, and if I do get to read a little bit, I won't be able to get it finished in time. So, and you sent me an electronic copy, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to take a look at that, because now you got me interested. Now I want to read your book. You know, sometimes we get people on here, and they write shit, and it's garbage. And I'm not saying I'm the best author in the world, because I'm not. But what I'm saying is we get shit. And it's garbage, and it just and you could tell it's garbage. You know, I mean, because they're trying to be like somebody else. If they're not writing about themselves, then you know how do others come to you? I write about my life. I want to write about my life. Okay. Somebody has some feedback because I hear myself through the mic. If you're listening to me on the computer, it's going to be some you know space in between where there's you know catching up. So.
Okay.
But my thing is, you know, you want to take yourself and go forward. So you, my question to you is going to be, you went with Jade, who is a great publishing company, what I've seen, and she's got some great workers out there. Versus going mainstream. So you didn't really try to do the mainstream thing because you felt like maybe it was too hard to get into, or what was your reasoning?
Well, the reason why I went with Jade was because I knew, for one, it was a great company. I mean, she's a great writer. She's got a great team of writers. You know, I've read everybody's book. And then, like, I've noticed with just her, you know, and the way that she presents her company and herself, nobody else was doing that, you know. And I didn't want to go with nobody else's company where they weren't going to put in, you know, just as much effort, if not more, that she was doing. Like, we're all a team hustlers. Every last one of us, you know, we support each other. It's just like having another family, and we really doing it. I knew that if I jumped into this and wanted to go with a company, I had to go with a company that was going to push me the same way I was going to push Jeff.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Because,
you know,
in the past, there was the Vicky Stringers. There was the different companies like that. The what's the girl that's crazy that wrote the Dutch and all that. I can't think of her name right now.
Terry Woods.
Yeah, Terry Woods or her company or those type of deals. Anyway, and she probably
went
call
crazy.
In and say, what the fuck? She is crazy. She ain't went crazy. Motherfucker's crazy. But anyway, have you ever talked to Terry Woods, man?
No.
I'm not going to do that because somebody out there might be listening that likes her really much and they might dog me out, but I'm, you know, it's my show.
Call
anyway,
her
Terry's
right now. Guess what this fool said.
Terry's got her own little thing going on in her head. You know, she feels like she's the queen of this, and she started it all off. But really, like we said last week, the people who started off was Iceberg Slim and Donald Goins and all those people. Those are the people that started the urban fiction, what these people are trying to do now. They haven't even come close to even writing what they wrote. Even though it was a different era of things that was going on, it's still, they had more, you know, life into it, more substance into what they're writing. Like you said, all these stories you said yourself is the same shit. Okay?
Yeah.
But they took Pimpin' and all this and put it into a different way. Dope Fiend and all these different books that he had written. This man had written about 40 books before he died.
Yeah.
Some that weren't even put out yet. Yeah, absolutely.
I read a lot of his stuff that he wrote, you know.
But a lot of these young people that's out now, these companies, the Leo Sullivans and all these people, I'm saying names, I can't believe it. But anyway, not saying that they're bad people or bad companies, but they're putting out shit real fast because they want to get quantity instead of quality sometimes. I'm not saying that all the people that write for these different companies are fucked up. I'm not saying that. Please don't take it that way. What I'm saying is when you put a mass production of stuff out there because you're trying to get paid, then that's the wrong reason to be putting books out. It's just taking a different product and making it the book your product now instead of drugs.
Right.
Does that make sense? Because you got some people, they probably was in trouble. They probably were living some of the lifestyle. So they changed the product from a drug to a book. They saw that they could get people to put stuff out, and they'll throw it out there quick, you know, whether it's good or not. And whoever bites it, that's who they're getting the money from. So for you to take a look at companies and pick, you know, that was good, and that you were good enough to write with her, because I'm going to tell you, Jay Jones, and I'm not just saying this because you're with her, and I've told her this myself, she is an author. She is truly an author. The word choices and things that she uses when she explains things to detail in her books, she really writes well.
Yeah.
She's a good writer. So there's some people that's out there that ain't that good. But I've read some of her stuff, and I know that she is very, very talented in what she's doing. So I know that what she's looking for in you all, people that's writing under her label, that she's trying to get that same type of thing. So, all right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's good. I know I'm talking a lot, but
that's fine.
So what are your what do you got going on now? You have any new projects that's out, or are you just concentrating on getting this book? You're doing book signings and going out, or what?
Well, I do have my next book I'm working on, which is called Bitter Skeletons. I've already picked the title because the way that
what's
the book
name
is going since I've been Bitter Skeleton.
Oh, Bitter Skeleton. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason why I chose that title is because, like, from the first book that I wrote, I took a character from my first book, wrote the second book. And then I took a character from my second book, and I'm writing Bitter Skeleton. So, like, all my books are kind of interconnected because of the characters. Because well, I'm writing about the same family, basically. But everybody has a different story to tell, and all of these stories that I'm telling tells you everything that you need to know about the entire family.
Well, that's a good idea, because a lot of times people will write, and I'm guilty of this myself, because I have a 5-book series on Scandalous Motives.
Mm-hmm.
And I took all those characters, and I kind of gave each one in each book a front, just like if you watch a show on TV, if you always notice, even on a crime show, one of the characters is always the focus for that show, for that particular show. So it sounds like to me you've done the same thing with each of your books. You're taking a character and making them the forefront of the book, but everybody else is still in there as supporting characters.
Right.
Which is good.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a good way of doing that, because a lot of times people just write shit and they just write it. They don't know. It just comes out.
I decided, like, you know, that I wasn't going to write, you know, the typical sequel to anything. Like, none of them have a sequel. They just interconnect. You know, like, everybody keeps asking me, oh, where's book two to No Bitch in My Blood? I'm like, you're not going to get a book two because there isn't a book two. But the way I ended book, you know what I'm saying, the way I ended that book set you up for my next book.
So why No Bitch in My Blood? Why?
Because the way that my main character, which her name is Teddy, to do what she has to do, like...
She has to be a bitch?
There's this... No, she doesn't have to be a bitch. I'm just saying, like, she had to not be a bitch. You see what I'm saying? Like, to have to do something that heavy, you know, something that heavy, and she's only 18 years old, you know, it's like, okay, there's people out here, you know, the typical killer or whatever you want to call them, you know, they're always hollering at house, they ain't got no bitch in their blood, and they're killers, and they're this, and they're that. I was like, well, let me play off of that, but make it different, you know.
Okay.
And
well,
so
let me say this. Go ahead. Let you finish your thought, and then I will say.
Oh, I was gonna say that. You know, I took a play off of that, and instead of making it something, you know, vicious, where if she was just running in the street, just shooting some of every damn body, I made it different and made her do what she had to do because it was a family thing.
So who are you targeting when you do your writing? Are you targeting the African-American community? Or are you targeting readers? Or what is your focus?
It's just readers. If I can get anybody to read my book, then that's fine. Like, I have no specific target whatsoever. Like, I'll pitch my book idea to anybody. Like, even when I'm out here in town where I live at, and I see somebody with a book or looking, you know, they got a Kindle or some kind of tablet where they're reading something, I'll approach a person, hey, check this book out. I don't care what color you are or what kind of books you read, but I'm trying to get you to buy my book and read my book because I see that you're already a reader. You know, sometimes I go sit at the library and I tell people about it at the library.
And you know the reason why I asked you that is because when we as authors choose titles and we choose certain things, I'm not saying it wasn't appropriate for that book, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that. So please do not take it that way. What I'm saying is if we're writing to readers, then we have to make it appealing to all readers, not just a certain, because a lot of times we can set ourselves up, even though we're writing urban fiction or whatever, we can set ourselves up to write, and it will be African-American sounding and African-American names and African-American this. Even though you explain in your next book that you have different races, you got Puerto Rican this and whatever that. But my thing is writing to people, you not necessarily have to, write just about us. And that's the story is meant to be just about us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So what I'm trying to say is you know, when you say, no bitch in my blood, who's going to pick that book up? And it probably is a black person on the front of the book, right?
No. It's a light-skinned Spanish chick.
Yeah. Understood. Now, if she was a hoe, she'd be this dark-skinned bitch that was,
because I have respect for hoes.
Because that's a stereotype, and I'm not saying you. I'm just saying this is the stereotype that we're falling into.
You're right, because I've seen that plenty of times.
Because we say she's
like
a light-skinned Spanish chick, she has to be mixed with something to be something else. Or you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from because you're right. I've seen that with a lot of books, though.
That's urban fiction, and that's black America. They think that they got to be mixed with something to be somebody. Oh, she's light-skinned with hazel eyes or green eyes and this and that. And then if she's fucked up, bitch, she got to be dark-skinned. And, it's that, I'm just asking.
Well,
Stevie, come on in. I know you got something to say.
Oh, man.
The only reason why she's a Spanish chick on the cover is because the story is about a Spanish chick. She was black.
And it's good. It's nothing
wrong. You know.
Don't take this wrong. Don't take
negative. No.
Nobody
is
criticizing you. I'm just saying this is urban fiction we're talking about. This is.
Yeah.
You know, even in erotica, sometimes we do the same thing. You know, there's this light-skinned female is the one that everybody wants. Nobody wants the dark-skinned chick. Nobody wants the, whatever. You know, she's got to be half white or something. I'm guilty of it myself. I'm not just saying you. I'm talking about, these are things that we have to try to look at when we're trying to focus ourselves with everybody reading our books. If we want everybody to read them, then we have to put maybe everybody in our books, or just make it generic to a point. You said no, D.B.?
Like, yeah.
I disagree up to a point.
I'm waiting on you to jump in.
I'm using it for, Valentine. When I wrote Valentine, the whole point was to make an assassin. And the whole point of being an assassin is being nondescript, you can change your appearance and nobody really knows who you are. If you have a dark-skinned person, that's automatically a characteristic that people remember and recognize. So I'm like, I can't, I love dark-skinned women, but I can't make her dark-skinned or else everybody recognizes it. If they say, I saw this dark-skinned woman walking in, you already got a description of your assassin, I had to make her as nondescript as possible. So I gave her, black features, but I mounted it on somebody who was multicultural, But what I'm saying is this. There are already white people who say, it's a black book, I wouldn't understand it. These are words. If you don't understand words, then you should not be reading books.
Right.
And I agree with you, Vivi, what you're saying. I agree with you.
Me wrong. I think what we do is we cater to one audience too much because in all honesty, we don't know how to talk to white people. We know how to dog white people, but we don't necessarily know how to talk to them. So whenever I'm out selling my books and, white people come across my counter, I'm out there addressing them as I would a black woman or a black man or, anybody else simply because I'm like, look, these are words. And there's nothing about these words that are written any differently than your Stephen King's, than anybody else out there. It is not the kind of story that we like, you're not going to understand, simply because all human stories are human-based. We all have these experiences, or we know people who've had these experiences. So if you want to know more about it, then go ahead and pick up the book and read it. But if that's what you want to believe, that you can't understand my book because I wrote it and you're not going to understand me, what you're really saying is you don't want to deal with black people. Because I don't know a single black person out there like, these are all white characters. I'm not going to understand it. I don't know a single reader anywhere who says that, especially not a black reader.
Are you right? I mean, I get what you're saying, and you're absolutely correct what you're saying, but I think they look at it like that. differently than, like you said, the way you explained it, it makes a lot of sense. To me, like I said, because we've been reading white authors and white literature forever, so nobody looks at it. Well, I got to understand what they're talking about. But soon as they see something urban or something that's out of the context, they feel like, you know, even with the title, you know, the name of your book, would you say it was The Bitch? What was it called again?
No Bitch in My Blood.
Yeah, okay. You know, even though they understand those words, they're still going to think, well, I ain't reading that because that's got to be urban or something. You know, it depends. I'm not saying everybody's going to turn their back on it.
Yeah,
but
like,
I'm just saying.
There was a post in a Facebook group that I promote in sometimes, and there was a lady, she said, you know, I honestly want to know, because my opinion is that the reason why people use the word bitch in their title is because it garners more sales. So, you know, I got in on the comments and stuff, because some people were like, yeah, I think so, and this, that, and the third, whatever. And I'm like, you know,
but there's so many books out there with bitch in it.
What they really say is shock value. They want to be more recognized than the next person, so they're going to do something that the next person is not going to do. They're going to throw half-naked people in the cover. They're going to throw an occasional bitch or hoe or slut, you know what I'm saying? Anything to gather attention, but all types of attention ain't good attention.
Right. Yeah, well, there's a whole series out there. Joy King has the bitch series out there. I mean, it's been going on for quite some time. She has a whole 10, 12 book series about bitch, this, bitch, that. And it's her picture. She's the woman that's on the cover. She's fine enough, to be on it. Anybody could do their own cover, but she's on the cover, so, you know, she's the bitch.
Yeah,
she's talking about it, you know. So you know, it just depends. But, how many books can you write about bitch?
Right.
Apparently a lot.
Like I told the people when I was talking to them, I was like, you know, I can't speak for everybody else. I can only speak for myself, and I use it as it pertains to my story. You know,
and please don't take it like I'm telling you.
I'm not
telling you wrong.
People don't want to hear a logical argument, and that's just a fact. You know, they want to put you in a category where you must be one of them if you think that bitches, you know, that what I do is bad.
Yeah, because I had a lady right away jump on me. She was like, well, this. I'm like, yo, look, I'm not going to argue with you. We can just agree to disagree. But unless you've read my book, you don't know my story, so you can't put me in a category with everybody else.
Right. Well, they got all kinds of books out there now, because they got one out there called Open Legs, Don't Get Fed. I mean, it's... I mean, you can write about anything you want to now. It's out there. You know what I'm saying?
And
the cover's off the chain. I ain't gonna lie. Open Don't Fear by Red Johnson. I think Red Johnson, and I don't know if that's a male or a female because I don't know Red's.
But
I want to get them on the show so I can talk.
But you're right, Red. You know, there are some titles that just do not need to be out there. I still don't see a reason to put nigga in a title of anything. You know what I'm saying? Because to me, you know, you basically give the white people, you know, if they buy this book, they like, I want
to passage to say
this
it.
Nigga,
right.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You essentially give them permission because it's in your freaking title, you know. So, there are certain titles that should not be out there. There are certain
Like Silver Platter Hoe.
Right.
Silver Platter Hoe, okay. I mean, and then you got this light-skinned female, again, on the cover.
Right.
She's a silver platter hoe and shit. You know,
denigrate ourselves. You know. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of black people that hate themselves and don't even realize it, you know. And it's just kind of one of them things that, you know, you want to wake up people. You want to be like, look, you know, this is not helping you sell your brand. This is making you look real ignorant, and they want to jump down your back because you want to hold them to a higher standard. Well, look, I finally came to the realization that I can't want better for you. You got to want better for yourself, you know.
When they see this stuff, they're going to say, well, there they go again, doing what they always do. You know, that's the only reason why I even brought it up. Not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that we just need to look at ourselves to a point where we can say, look, we can do more than just put the same shit out there all the time.
Right.
You know, every time when you go to a black movie at the movie theater, you think it's going to be some comedy bullshit, you know, especially if it's got certain actors in it, you know, that are funny, automatically it has no plot, it's nothing to it, it's just a laugh. You know, and people go because they want to, it's called buffoonery. Buffoonery or niggery or whatever you want to call it, buffoonery.
Buffoonery and buffoonery.
there you go. So, you know, we need to get out. We need to be serious about our craft sometimes. There's nothing wrong with having some books that says bitch this and that, but does everything have to be bitch or hoe?
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
I'm just,
you
know, that's just
that.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you on like, that, and I see exactly where you guys are coming from with it.
Yeah, like me, a while back, me and Treasure Blue got into it, you know, and essentially because of this, I was like, look, you know, there's nothing wrong with writing a book. You know, just don't put a half-assed product out there. You know, put out the best product that you possibly
can. Yeah, he's another one that puts
gonna,
out a whole bunch of
yeah,
shit real fast.
Right. But yeah, wait, you know, like, then, like, you know what? We got into a heated argument, you know what I'm saying, to the point where I've never been the type of person that argue with somebody and go after them personally. Well, then he tried to come after me personally, and, you know, we got into it. But at the end of the day, it's as simple as this, you know. If you want other people to respect what you do, and people have to realize, everybody has to realize that the whole world is looking at you. So the more popular you become, the more you have to sit back and say, okay, not, you know, the more you have to be conscious of what you put out there. Which is
right.
Why, you know, I'm constantly on, you know, Tyler Perry. Because the thing is, it's like, well, at least he's giving black people a job. He damn sure ain't giving them a job directing. Because I have yet to see Tyler Perry say, look, you know, I'm going to have some black directors direct some of my movies. No, if it's not Tyler Perry,
I'm glad
directing,
that,
no, nobody else is.
She'd be going crazy right now.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's
but you're right,
that
though.
You
absolutely
give people a job.
Right.
But if you really want other people to have an opportunity, give them directorships, give them producerships, allow them to produce a movie under your name, under your tutelage and your supervision, so that you can say yes. You know, you just produce the next crop of great, you know, movie writers and movie producers and movie directors. As it is now, the reason why we complain is because we're getting the same shit regurgitated over and over and over.
And
over
again,
we're just supposed to shovel in our mouth and be like, thank you kindly, sir, for giving us another movie.
And, you know, like we talked last week about the James Brown movie and stuff. We talked a little bit about that last week. I just want to correct some things that we said last week that wasn't correct. I know it was mentioned that the family was not involved in all that, but listening to Tom Joyner this morning, he had James Brown's oldest daughter, Dr. Yasmin Brown, and she said the whole family was involved in that movie, even though it didn't show the whole story of his life. It just showed more singing. She said they got a documentary that's coming out now that they were a part of as well that shows his ups and downs, his drugs and all that. But the movie that they did on screen, that they did that's out now, wasn't that side of James Brown. They didn't want to show that side. They were showing the side of him coming up and being who he was as an entertainer. So, you know, a lot of times we got to really do our research, me included, to make sure before we say something that we know exactly what we're saying, because a lot of times people think that these movies are being made and the family's not involved, and they are. I know the Leah movie wasn't, and then the thing with that they're trying to do with Whitney Houston, there were some issues there. But we just got to make sure that, you know, like I said, we want to have a good product come out. We don't always want to have some shit. And we have to be part of it as well. If we're going to be writers and authors, then we need to put something, a good product out there that's worth it. And if it's going to be urban fiction, yeah, make it urban, make it different. You know, don't make it the same old bullshit. Drug dealer goes to jail. He comes, like I said, he gets out, his shit's back. He got to get his empire back, his woman and all that, you know.
Yeah. Really. And that's, you know, that's the same typical bullshit, which is why, like, I know I'm not going to stay in urban fiction, but this is where I want to start because I feel like it has the biggest target audience to get my name out there, you know, to really put a product out there for people to get a feel of my writing style.
But you have an erotic fiction name. You have an erotic fiction name.
I have an erotic fiction name?
Divine Six. That's some fucking adulterous Divine Six. Yeah, that's erotic fiction. How did you come up with that versus some other good name?
Man, she could just as
I've
you
never
know, be
thought of it
No, seriously,
I've never
though. I mean,
it that
it's,
way, but,
it's more
but
of like it was, like a stripper name or some shit, stripper, or whatever.
No.
I mean, what? I mean, you know.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Really?
Really?
I have, okay.
Go ahead, DV. I mean, really, though,
like,
seriously. It could have went anyway. I'm just fucking with you, really. The name is good. I'm not dogging your name. It can go with urban fiction, but it also you can twist that into some damn erotica. I mean, you can twist that name into anything.
A friend of mine actually told me, because he writes erotica, and he, you know, we talk back and forth a lot, and he comes to me, he was like, here's this, I'm kind of stuck on this part, helped me out. And, like, he's got this book called Desire getting ready to come out. And he was
trying to... Okay, another Desire. Okay. There's, like, 15 Desires out there. Okay.
And he was trying to come up with a theme to create the sexual attention, you know what I'm saying, where everybody can read it and feel it. And, I mean, he's my friend and everything, but every time he comes to me with something, I tell him the truth, you know. And he laid the scene out for me, and I was like, yo, that's whack, you know. But if you do it like
he can't write erotica?
Okay.
No, the scene that he wrote was whack as hell.
Yeah.
So I rewrote it for him, and he was like, yo, that's hot. Like, I'm really thinking about that right now. I can picture it. So, I mean, I know I'm not going to say in urban fiction, but this is where the biggest target audience is to get my name out there.
And
so
also, he's probably using – just understand he's using you to get to you by having you write with him so you can get hot, and hopefully you will act out the scene. That's what he's trying to do. So
yeah,
just,
it happened. I got a husband.
Well, just know that.
He is good where he is at. I don't want that.
But my thing is, and understood. But my thing is, how are you going to write erotica and you can't get yourself hot reading this shit?
I don't know how he did that, because my whole thing was when I read it, I was like, what is this shit?
Can you give me an example? You don't have to say his name. Just give me an example of what it was that he wrote so people know not to write that way when they fucking write erotic fiction.
Okay, his theme was two females, and they were at some type of club or whatever. It was like some type of amateur night, strip club, night chick, whatever. And he basically was like, I forgot what the hell the name of his main characters were any damn way. I think it was Sapphire, L, or whatever.
Oh,
but
God, that is so
here we go, stripper names. Okay.
And he was like... He goes, they're dancing on stage, and you can tell that the sexual energy is thick between them. And
so he's telling
that,
the story.
I think he said that. Yeah, and he's like, Sapphire climbs up the pole, and L did. And I'm like, what is this bullshit? This is bullshit. That's what that is. I wouldn't read it.
He's writing the way he would see it if he was in the stripper club looking at it. He needs to.
Right.
One thing I learned about writing erotica, you can't write the way you would see it. You got to write the way a woman. If your target audience is a woman, you got to write it the way a woman sees it. Or in such a manner that it will make her hot. You can't be writing. He's looking at it like I'm sitting in a strip club and she got on the pole.
Her titties wiggling. Yeah, I love wiggling titties.
I mean. That's the way a man would look at that.
Not the way you do it, buddy.
Right. And that's why I told him, I was like, you can't write that, because ain't nobody finna read that bullshit.
Maybe he shouldn't write erotica. Does he have a book published already?
I'm not for certain. I don't think he does, because I think he's just getting his feet wet or whatever.
Here's what you do. You tell him that there are other job openings right now, and he should look to... branch out into be a jack of all trades, but be a king of one. All right, just go ahead and master with whatever job you're doing, buddy.
Or write another type of story and use that as a scene that the guy goes in and see them on the stage doing, and then that's it, because that shit ain't gonna go anywhere.
Yeah, because I had to rewrite his whole scene for him. I'm like, no, bro.
Recognize this. If you need help writing or setting up a scene, that's different. If you got to rewrite somebody's whole story, they don't need to be an author. They don't, they just need to give that dream up right then. Because the thing is, in order to be an author, you got to be a reader. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And being a reader means you at least understand sentence structure, there are some things that you're just automatically going to understand because you've seen enough books where it was done this way. But if you're writing books like, yeah, if you say yeah, in a book, then just hang it up. Just give it
exactly. Just let it go.
That's the character speaking and the character talks that way. But if you're explaining it as a narrator, you call yourself trying to grab your audience and be part of the audience doing that, they don't want to read it that way, even if it's
urban
fiction.
It's not going to be read like that. And, I've had a couple of different people hit me up in my inbox. Hey, I got this story. Can you check it out for me? And I'm like, when I got some time, every now and then, I'll check out somebody's story. And I had this little girl.
Don't get yourself caught up in that.
Right.
No.
Get yourself caught up doing that.
I made that mistake.
I'm not going to say her
name. Don't get yourself caught up in it.
I'm not going to say nothing. But she asked me to read her book and give her some honest feedback. And, you know, the only reason why I even did it was because she just, like, she was persistent. She was persistent as hell. Like, please, 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 because you're such a good writer. And because she had read my first book. And I'm like, okay, well, I check it out. I read that shit, and I got a fucking headache reading that shit. And I was like, let me explain to you what's wrong with your book. And I'm saying this because you asked me for some honest feedback, so I'm telling you as a reader. I'm not telling you as an author. I'm telling you as a reader. This is the shit that you did wrong. You know, I said, and if it wasn't me, it's going to be somebody else who's reading your book that's going to tell you, you know, I'm not saying that it's garbage, but the way that you're telling the story and the shit that you're doing in the story is entirely too much. You use entirely too many cuss words. You know, don't nobody want to read in one damn sentence, shit, fuck, ass, and all this stuff in the same damn sentence. Like, I feel like I was
right.
watching a damn Samuel Jackson movie the way I was fucking reading her book.
Right.
You know, everything was fuck this and fuck that. And I told her that. I said, you know, when you're a writer, you have to have an expansive vocabulary. You can't use the same, you know, you can't use the same thing over and over and over and over again. I said, and that's what I see when I'm reading your book. It's the same thing over and over. You're saying the same thing. You're just saying it 20 different damn ways. That's going to make people look at you like, I don't want to pick up another one of her damn books. Because
right.
if this is the way that she's writing, you know, she looks stupid. She looks ignorant. She looks dumb.
Well, I don't understand. But I don't understand why people, like you said, you got to be able to read. You got to be a reader to write. But my thing is like the guy, I understand why he didn't just go and look at some different erotica that's out there. It's all on the
internet.
You can go out there and look at stuff and get examples. You know, you can even take some examples of that and kind of twist some things and put it in your own book if you know what you're doing. But you don't know if you don't do it. You don't want to copy verbatim the same thing somebody else got and put it in there. But you want to be able to take something and take that scenario and make it fit to your story. You can do that. There's nothing wrong with doing it as long as you're not plagiarizing the whole thing and making it, you know, yours. You have to be able to switch it around and fix it to fit the scene or what's happening.
Right.
You might take
a
piece of this and then have it twist another way to do something else. You know, it's nothing wrong with doing that as long as you're, like I said, as long as you're not taking the whole thing. Go ahead, DB.
There are two kinds of authors, those that think they can do better than their favorite author or those that think they can do just as good as their favorite author. If you're not either one of those, then don't be a writer.
Right.
You know, because if you just like, well, you know, if you just saw somebody, you know, or you saw a scene or somebody read you a scene, you're like, I can do better than that, well, then tell me who your favorite author is that does this genre. Because if you haven't read several of their books and got an understanding of how, you know, how to write and how to, you know, put things together, then you're not going to be a good writer. You know, you may, you know, and that's just what people don't understand. They think just because, you know, the street says, hey, you know, there's no, you know, there's no construction going on that you can just drive as fast as you can across the street. It doesn't work that way, you know. You always got to watch, you know, for all these pitfalls in front of you. And one of the major pitfalls is knowing how to write. You got to know how to write to be a writer. You don't have to be perfect at it, you know, because there's no writer that came out with their first book that was just perfect. It was you know, going down in history is one of the best books ever. You know, it just doesn't happen that way. But, you know, we all
grow. The only book that everybody keeps saying is that, who?
About to say, don't
say
the Bible.
Who?
The Bible.
I wasn't going to say that. But what I was going to say was everybody's so into the coldest winter ever.
Yes.
You know, it's just that book, everybody will tell you that was the book of the century. She was really hungry when she wrote that book. But all the rest of her books haven't been that good. They've been good, but not as good as that one.
Not as good as that one, yeah.
Right. She set a high bar, you know, and everybody was expecting her to surpass that bar. And that's the hardest thing when everybody has this expectation is to overachieve. You know, when the expectations are low, you can pretty much do whatever you want within reason. But when they set that, when people outside of you set that bar arbitrarily high, it is hard as hell to get back where, you know, where they set it. So you can't write for everybody else. You have to write for you. But in writing for you, you got to know the fundamentals.
Right.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not. I have several books out, I'm not saying that my books are the best because you know they're not, but they're
mm-hmm.
they're where they're at. You know what I'm saying? And people are reading.
Stop doing that, Red.
People are enjoying.
Your books are good because you wrote them.
Well, they are. But the thing is, you know. but the thing is I'm just saying, you know, I have 15 erotic books out there.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple of paranormal books. They have sex in them as well. But the thing is you know. You just got to be able to, you know, and I want to write other things besides that, but it's just what I started out with. Just like you said, you're starting out with urban fiction. I have a couple of serial killer books in me that I want to put out. But
mm-hmm.
they are going to have sex, and there's going to be some sex, it just won't be as much, you know.
Right.
The thing is,
right.
It's just being able to take and write things that you're not used to. Just like people, you know, we always use Stephen King as a perfect example because although he's crazy, I don't think he's killed nobody in real life that we know of. But he can write about that
yeah.
shit. So you have to be able to convince people that you,
okay.
you know, that you can, you know, do these, that they're reading something that's for real and not really have experiences. Just
yeah.
like with Walter
right.
Mosley, you know, the stuff that he writes. He's fabulous,
mm-hmm.
the things that he's written. You know, there's lots of great authors out there, you know. But
yeah,
even with
yeah.
erotica, we haven't done all the things that we write about, the sexual scenes that I've written. I ain't done all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be dead. But, you know, it's just, you know, you have to
yeah.
do what you have to do and make it happen. Okay, let me see if this
yeah.
is Draker coming in there. All right, hold on just a second. 908 area
okay.
code. State your name, where you calling from.
Yo, what's good? It's Draker.
Hey, Draker,
oh,
what's going on?
You like 3 hours late.
Girl, let me tell you, my job has been trying to work me like a $2 slave. I'm surprised they took my shackles off.
Oh, man.
I
don't
make this money. If I don't make this money, I'm going to have to go sell it on the street. I don't know if y'all want me to do that, but you do. I got to make that money.
Okay.
Hey, you
okay.
should have said it's red like I'll buy.
No. We ain't going to go there. We're going to leave that alone. Okay,
y'all
but look.
Right now.
We got authoress Divine Six here on the line as well, and she's with us. And so say hi to Miss Draker Armstrong.
How you doing? How you doing, sweetie? I'm doing all right. Clowning with these guys on here.
Yeah, they're a bunch of
clowns, but they're good clowns.
Yeah,
I love them all.
Yeah, we gonna clown. You sure is. But check this out. Now that we got you, and not trying to cut you off, Mr. Divine Six, because we're gonna come back to you. But let's go ahead and get Drake.
Mm-hmm.
Are you? Do you have to get off? Do you have to? Can you be on for a while, or you have to go?
Yeah, I can be on for a while. I just left work. I'm in the car. I'm chilling, so I'm free.
Okay, so give us an update. You know, you got this new book that's out there called, what is it? Is it erotica? Is it
Betrayal Between the Sheets?
Some dicks getting cut out? Rain of Bobbitt going on or what? What's happening?
Nah, not even. What's going on is this book is actually based loosely off of a true story. A guy I dated in the past, he had children with a woman who died. And I asked him, you know, what if you and I got together and she came back? And he was like, you mean like a ghost? I'm like, no, not like a ghost, meaning that she went away. You know, she left.
Faked her death or something and came back and was really alive
exactly.
and shit.
Exactly.
Oh.
So I asked him, what would you do? And he said, after I choke the shit out of her for leaving me and my kids, I'm going to hug her and then I'm going to choke her ass again. And then, but I said, well, who would you choose? You loved her and you loved me. Who would you choose? And this
Damn
is where
question.
The book, and that's where the book picks up at, from that question.
That's it.
Mm.
Like, don't want to give me pussy.
Mm.
That's the one I stay with.
See how she did that, Divine Six? You see how she gave us a quick synopsis
yeah.
of the book? And she told us everything we needed to know. Now, people that are listening will pick up that book and read it because they want to know now
right.
who is he going to choose without telling the host
right.
the whole book. That's the way
right.
you have to be able to do that. Great job,
okay.
Draka. Okay, so what's going on? You got your own radio show and all this shit now, and I ain't been on there yet?
No,
here's the thing.
Let me just explain. I did have my own show. That is correct. I did have my own show. Unfortunately, I actually stopped my show a couple months ago. The producer and I are still good friends, but we just felt that we needed that break. She is actively trying to get me back on her show. She's trying. But
okay,
I haven't decided to go back yet.
Okay.
Well, it ain't mine, because mine ain't here.
okay, I hear some children. And
yeah, that's my kids.
Okay, okay, all right. As long as they don't hear you cussing, I mean,
you know.
You know,
I
they don't hear me now,
show.
Do they?
No, they can't hear you.
I hope not, because you've been saying some real, real live words.
I do be messing up. Red do say some shit.
That's right.
And, you know, I went to church for a little while. I was trying my best, but it just didn't work for me. I love the Lord, don't get me wrong. I don't even have to explain myself. I still love God, and I'm still with him. It's just that this thing is me. This is what I do. So,
you
had a show and you let it go.
Yeah,
you did. So you had a show, you had to let it go, and you got this book. What are you up to now?
Screenwriting. I'm doing screenwriting now. I am producing, and I just wrote my first short film, which will be entered in numerous film festivals. The short film is called His Dying Wish. Essentially, it's about a man who dies, and as a part of his dying wish, he wants his mistress and his wife to split proceeds of his inheritance.
Oh, wow.
That's
different.
Wow. Yes. That is it. See what I'm saying? She has these innovative ideals that she comes up with. And everybody, as writers, you can tell that this is people that read or even watch movies, and they are able to articulate that stuff into a book. Using their own, but make it their own. And that's what DV was telling you a few minutes ago. Make it your own. You can tell the same story, but make it your own by changing and twisting it up that it ain't the same story. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's what we have to do as writers. And you know, if you're going to write the same pimp with the jail and whatever, just have it switched up some kind of way where it ain't just pimp went to jail. You know what I mean? You know,
right.
like Drake has got this book, Beautiful Liars, out there. She's going to talk about that, too. When did that come out? God damn.
Well, Beautiful Liars you know me. I got some stuff in the burners. Beautiful Liars was my very first book. I want to say, not well-versed author. I actually honed my craft. And with that, I wanted to re-bring it out, but with a different spin to it, with more of me being articulate in what I was trying to say. Exactly.
That's what I did with the book that I have out now, Morris After Dark. It was another book, and I revised it and changed it up a little bit and brought it out again, and I let people know that so they don't think I've lost my writing ability or I'm fucking them over. I'm letting them know that the reason why I switched that book to what it is now is because the deal I was with when I wrote the other book, was called Seductive Company, and I was involved with this porn star at the time who was collaborating with me on the book. The porn star is on the cover of that old book, which is not in circulation, but it's probably still out there, a few of them still going, but the story is different now. But anyway, we fell out, I'll just say that. Things didn't work, just like it didn't work with you and the producer or whatever, I don't know. But anyway, it didn't work with us, so I had to, in order for me to go forward with this book, I had to change it, because if I wanted to make a sequel in the future, if I decided to do that, I couldn't use her, and I couldn't use her name, because her name was in the book as a character. So I had to take her out of the book and put a whole new character doing the things that she was doing. So I recreated the book and made it what it is now, and it's doing pretty well. But the thing is the story is kind of the same, but it's changed. There's some twists in there that is not the same, so it doesn't come out with the same outcome. So,
exactly.
You know,
So
a lot of authors do that a lot. A lot of authors rewrite and redo their books. Doesn't mean that they don't have anything else or they're just fucked up. But, I mean, it's just like all these different stories that are out there. Like DV's favorite, The Three Musketeers, has been out. There's so many versions of that. So many versions of Christmas Carol. You know, I mean, it's the same thing I did with this, basically. And it was mine. I wrote the whole book. This porn star didn't write shit. She just put her face on it.
Okay. Yeah,
anyway,
absolutely
back
correct.
To you.
So that's what's been going on. But I also have a new book that'll be out within a couple of months. This book, which may be familiar to a lot of you, this book is called The Game of Trust and Betrayal. And what that book is, because of my time constraints, people have been asking for sequels for Trust No One, Game Over, and already I'm being asked for the sequel for Betrayal Between the Sheets. So I figured, why not make all of my books into a sequel into one book?
So you're going to have your characters meet each other if they haven't already.
Exactly. They will all meet each other.
Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
They will all meet each other at a couple's retreat. Mm-hmm. They will all meet each other at a couple's retreat, and the book is called The Game of Trust and Betrayal.
I like talking to you. That's why I like having your ass on the show, because you always got some ideas. I'm going to use
that. Well, you know what? You know what? And see, that's why I kept it secret for so long, because I said to myself, as soon as I put that cat out the bag, it's going to be about four or five people that's going to take like 10 of these books and make them into. So you know what?
Right.
Just know that if you make it big with that idea, I want some hair. Okay? I want my hair.
I hear that.
Not a problem. But the thing is, it's not going to be the same. Because you can get, for giving an idea, you'll get some money. But the thing is this. the way you write children is definitely going to be the way I be different the way if I was to do it my way. And, you know, because the characters are different, they've done different things, so it's not going to be the same idea. It'll be the same concept, but it won't come out, the outcome will be a little different. So, yeah, I understand, yeah. And I'm sure some people may have done that already. But the way you have it set up, I think it's going to be outstanding, and I can't wait till you get that out there.
Oh,
so when is that
going to
drop? You think it'll be next year sometime or what? When do you think that?
I wanted to drop that around April of next year, because I'm also with the screenwriting I'm doing. There's a few other smaller screenwriting projects that I'm embarking on, and I also started a comedy blog. So I just released my first comedy blog this past Friday. It was called Funeral Etiquette. Yes.
What?
It's on my page. It's on YouTube. What? It's called Funeral Etiquette. I wrote a blog because I had to let my people know why it, like, I mean, it touched on a lot of good points, and, you know, not to spoil it for some, but it touched on people need to interview their soloists. You cannot, I'm tired of going to funerals. And the soloist sounds like they would never make it past the audition process of American Idol. I'm telling you, and that whole, my blog is based on my experiences, and then me being the nut that I am, I just make it funny. Like, I addressed that the reason for the blog is because of the funerals I've been to and what I've seen, particularly in regards to the soloist. A couple, maybe like 12 years ago, my uncle died, and I asked my cousins who was singing, and my cousin said her husband. And we thinking this brother was going broke, because she said he sung in the church choir. Stood up there, sounded like a dead cat in heat. I thought my uncle was going to sit up out the pocket and toss his boot to the back of his damn head and tell him to shut the hell up. So, you know, I definitely addressed that. I also addressed the naked cards, which a lot of people just found out what a naked card is. And for those who don't know, a naked card is a sympathy card with no damn money in it. Where's the sympathy? I think you left that out of the card. I don't want your words. I want your money. Don't give me no card with no sympathy in it. I don't want to read that. They're going to read that at the service in the acknowledgement section. I don't need to read it. Where's the money? I don't want them naked cards. I give them back.
That's
really a lot of truth.
I know that's right.
Yeah,
okay, well, you know, like I said, this woman has plenty of ideals. Plenty of ideals. And we got a caller that's calling in. Let me see if this caller has something to say. 817 area code. State your name, where you're calling from.
Okay, this is Kim, Mr. Snapper. I'm just joining in. I overslept a little bit. Not sure what your topic is for today. So I'm going to listen in and chime in when I can.
Is this Kim Davis?
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm making it. God is good.
Making it.
Amen.
Okay. Are you feeling okay?
Yeah. Yes, I'm
sure, Kim.
Feeling...
Don't lie.
Well, I might be taking the hospital after I go back to the doctor tomorrow. But
I hope not, Kim.
I'm praying.
Okay.
been with me.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not going to bother you. I'm going to let you listen. We're going to try to make you laugh and shit, okay? All right. Thank you for calling in. But I hope you feel better.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Kim Davis, she's a friend of mine. She's a supporter. So we just wanted to, Draka is always, I love when she comes on because she's always got so much going on in her life with things she's doing with her craft. You know, kind of like Jade Jones, Divine Six, when you were saying how Jade has a lot of things going on. They're innovative people who know how to make things happen, and they're humble in it, and they're not trying to outdo the other person. They just want their piece. And that's what I see Jade doing, and that's what Draka does. So DV dropped. I guess he'll be coming back. I think it's interesting that you have these great ideals. I'm not going to take your ideal. That's a good idea. You're going to do that. I think that's great. And I like to see the finished product when you get that done and see how it comes out, because it sounds like it's going to be nice. You're going to have them all meet each other, and they already have personalities, which I like about that ideal is the characters are already developed. All you have to do is make them interact. That's
exactly
what I like.
And the common goal between all the characters is, of course, that they have that in some way, shape, and form in each book, they've all had marital problems that they have overcome. But what begins to beg the question between the couples is, have you really gotten over what caused the strain in your marriage? Have you gotten over the hump, or have you kept quiet and settled? And now,
so how many characters do you think? How many characters do you think you'll have?
I will have, from Trust No One, I will have Monica and Victor and her previous husband, Rodney. From Game Over, I will have Rico and Erica. And from Betrayal Between the Sheets, I will have Vivian, who is the ex-wife, Tara, who is the new wife, and Richard, who is the man between the men. I may even bring in his mother, because his mother was a very big strain in both of those marriages. So I definitely would like to see her interact with them more.
There's a reason why I asked you that, is because, I'm a firm believer that you can make a book work with as many characters as you want to have. You got some people that read out there, they can't handle more than three or four characters, and it fucks them up. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to do with it. But I think that's a great mix to me, because my books always have at least six or seven characters that to work with that's going on.
Exactly.
Even if the character's in there for a few minutes and don't see them anymore, they get killed or whatever. But the thing is, I don't think it's a problem to have more than two or three characters. When a person can't handle that many characters, to me it must be that they don't read a lot, or something's wrong, or they can't comprehend because they can't handle that many characters. What do you think about that, both of you ladies? I'm going to give you a chance to both answer on that.
Well, it's not so much that the reader, there could be a chance that the reader may not be able to handle the characters, but it also could be the writer's structure. Because if writers use television and or movies as their blueprint, when you're watching a TV show, in one particular scene, there's one character who's vocal over everyone else, and you have the other characters who are playing a minimal role. When you have 8 to 17 characters all playing a pivotal role at the same time, it does make the reader confused, because for that moment you don't know who you're supposed to focus on, because everybody got a point A. You need that point A person. When you have it's like too many chiefs and Indians, you can't have everybody in the kitchen trying to cook. You need one chef, and you need helpers. And when you have too many chefs, shit just go crazy.
Exactly.
Well, Go ahead.
Now, I was gonna say that my whole thing was, is like, when you have your main character, who is your main focus, you're gonna have to have your characters that support them. But when you have all these different ass characters, and there's a whole bunch of different stories going on at the same time, you're going to lose your readers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have to have your supporting characters to your main character that makes the story vital. You can't have 20 different damn people in the book that you're talking about, because by the end of the book, it'll be like, who the fuck was the story about?
Mm-hmm.
But, all that is true to a point. And let me tell you why. Because if you, like you said, the main words that you said was author structure. Now, you can make this work. The way you can make it work by having, say you got 10 characters. With the number you had, what, 8, 9, 10 characters, right? You could, as long as all the characters aren't the main character, like you said, they have to be supporting. They might have been the main character in that one book, but they're not in this one. You know, somebody has to be the main pivotal point here. Second, it can work is as long as there is a connection where maybe one has something or the other and you connect them in a manner that is secretive, where they're doing stuff behind each other or something happens and one may know about it and the other one doesn't, it can work. But, like you said, people have to be in their position. They have to be in the role that they need to be in. Everybody can't be the main character. So you're going to have to pick one person, even though all these characters have been somewhere in a book and have been that character, one couple or one person is going to have to be the main objective on why they went there, and everybody else is going to be supporting characters to that.
Right.
So it can work. You just have to decide who is going to be that one.
You're absolutely correct.
Does that make sense?
I think it does make sense. And what also makes sense is that with me, and it's not even to toot my own horn, but as many people already know, I'm in film school, and film school has taught me to look at movies and TV in a very different view. I no longer watch TV for the entertainment. When I watch TV now, I see the mechanics of each scene, of each word, of each line, of each script. And what I have been using for my blueprints for my book, and it's a very strange thing, Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins. The movie with, you had so many major stars. You had Martin Lawrence, you had Monique, you had Mike Epps, Cedric the Entertainer, James Earl Jones, Nicole Ari Parker, Michael Clark Duncan. You had so many pivotal characters. But if you actually go through the movie, and now that I'm saying this, when you go through the movie, you'll really see. Each scene that is displayed on the film, one character is the main focus. If it may have been when they were in the kitchen, when Bianca's character came in with the dog, you had all those people in the kitchen, but Monique was the primary focus. She was talking about her thong and a G-string and talking about a sweet tea and all that. She was the main focus, even though there were other major celebrities in that one moment. She was the focus, and that's how the camera and the script was written to portray person in that scene. There's one focal person. That is it.
Everybody had a chance to be the focus.
Exactly.
Right.
If there
not
is
just
a
Roscoe Jenkins, but everybody else.
Exactly. Exactly.
Even though
and
Roscoe was the main character, everybody had a piece.
Right.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Everybody
had
a piece to it.
And that's what you have to do in this book. When you write this book, and I know it's going to be off the chain.
Oh, you know,
Because it's going to be, when you do that, it's going to be that. Because now you have that background with you as well to show you that. You know, I write a screenplay. I have a screenplay that I'm finishing up myself. I haven't been to film school, but I do have this screenplay, and I'm definitely going to, I may even run it by you and let you look at it once it's done. Because it's just a basic screenplay. It doesn't have the camera angles and none of that stuff, because you have to add that later, but. I might do that. So
you
if you don't mind, if you have time, man, I will bring that to you.
No problem at all.
Huh?
I would definitely like to see that. But you would be surprised at a lot of stuff that people think are in an actual script is not. You would be surprised. And you know, with being
– It's actually easier to write a script, isn't it? What
you,
I'm seeing is easier to write a script
it's
than it is
easier.
A book.
It's easier in some aspects it is, but in some aspects it's not. Because you know how we've said on this show, and we've said it plenty of times, not every idea should be made into a book. We say that, we've been saying that since the age of time. And it goes the same way for script, but to a point where you then see the flip side, you can make everything into a book, but you can't make everything into a script. With a book, you have the allotted time and descriptions where you can describe Janet walking into a bedroom, and you can describe how she feels. You can describe what's happening in her heart. With scripts, it's tangible and it's intangible. You're only supposed to write what you can see what you can touch. You never so much write the character feels like you can't write what the people can't see. We can't see no one's feelings. We can see them bust your ass in the head. We can see them knock you upside your, you know, knock you on your mouth. But we can't see the sadness from the loss you just received. And that's where it gets a little different, because in books you can write very freely until your heart's galore. But in a script, it has to be concise. Your dialogue has to be sharp. What passes in the books that's out now, not saying all books is shit right now, but there's a lot of unvalidated material. I'll just say that there's a lot of unvalidated material that's floating through our industry. That's passable in books. That's not passable in Hollywood.
It's right, exactly.
It's not even looked upon. And so it's kind of like you can't, you can have an edgy script, but to use the word nigger, you have to go full out. You can't synthesize what you're saying because you think so. If you're going to go full steam ahead, you got to go nigger, bitch, fuck you, suck my dick, die, and go to hell. You got to go full throttle. You can't hold back, because then they see this person's a poser. We don't want this. Reject it. Goodbye.
So, what do you think?
It's fun.
Adaptive screenplays versus a straight-up screenplay from the head.
Adapting, I would say adapting a screenplay would be a little harder, because for the simple fact that if what you are adapting your screenplay from, if you're adapting your screenplay from an actual book and your readers have read that book, you tend to want to give them a different outcome. Like if you find out that, you know, this person died, and then that was how you ended it, you may want to add in stuff. What tends to happen is with books, books give you everything. Books give you everything about it that you've ever wanted to see. But then the actual movie, it plays on those words. It makes it a little more thrilling, a little more telling. What I would suggest for anybody, because I've done it, since I'm adapting many of my books into screenplays, what I have done, I have watched two very particular items. Two. Tyler Perry's Diary of a Mad Black Woman stage play and his movie Back to Back. And I personally have read The Da Vinci Code and then saw The Da Vinci Code movie. And you will see, and for those who don't have time to read that long-ass Da Vinci Code, the Tyler Perry play
and it is
a movie,
long-ass book.
Yes, that book is over 500 pages. You know,
I read it.
Exactly. And I read the book and saw the movie. So you reading the book, you can see how there were different elements from the book to the movie. The same thing with Tyler Perry's, his first stage play that we all saw, The Diary of a Mad Black Woman. You know, you see things like in the stage play, she was not drugged out of the house. She was not forced to leave her home. She wasn't confronted with his mistress at that time. She wasn't kicked out of a car on her anniversary. You know, she wasn't forced to live with Madea. You know, she wasn't forced out of her comfort zone. You know, Orlando pretty much came to her as he did in the movie. But it's kind of like, you know, at the end, you know, she went for her man. But it's kind of like seeing the differences between the two. You see where Tyler Perry added and he embellished in the movie far more than he did in the play. So if you want to adapt any of your books into a stage play, my honest suggestion would be for you to get any Tyler Perry stage play that was turned into a movie and watch the differences. Take notes on what happened in the stage play that didn't happen in the movie, or what happened in the movie that didn't happen in the stage play, and you'll see that those pivotal points were always embellished and elevated. He still kept the simple core stuff with Madea coming to help, to come help her figure stuff out, with Uncle Joe and the neighbor, they seeing white rabbits, you know, when they were smoking herbs. He kept the little stuff the same. But when he went to embellish on the bigger stuff, you didn't. If you didn't see the movie, you wouldn't have understood the play. And that's essentially what I would suggest for anybody.
And that makes sense to me because for the simple fact that, you know, you gotta, you know, when you go to a movie, the entertainment factor is more stronger, if that makes sense, than when you're doing it for a play. The play is a little different. It's, you know, you got the audience there because they want to be. Well, in both aspects, they're there because they want to be. But the thing is you gotta be. You expect more from a movie, so you gotta give more something to make people want to, you know, the think they're getting something. And a play, they know you're not going to get the full drama of a play. A play is different. So, but even though, and I know Tyler Perry is a talented guy and everything and all that, so do you think that the stuff he's doing, I'm not even going to ask that question. I'm going to leave that alone because I don't even want to get into the Tyler Perry.
Well, please do. But before you ask that, I want to say also another source of research is The Marriage Counselor stage play and The Marriage Counselor movie. That is the only Tyler Perry movie I have never seen in theaters because friends of mine told me, Drika, if you've seen the stage play,
you don't want to see the movie.
If you've seen the stage play, you don't want to see the movie. It is the exact same thing. Just choose the characters. Tyler Perry literally changed nothing from his stage play to the Marriage Counselor movie. Tyler Perry changed nothing, which could be why The Marriage Counselor was his lowest grossing movie. Of all his movies, it was his lowest grossing because folks asked him, why would you not change? He literally changed nothing about the stage play. All you had to do was just picture the characters in the movie in the stage play, and you already seen it. I waited until it came on free, on demand, and when I watched it, I said it's the exact same thing regarding there was no pizzazz. Watching that movie was watching the stage play.
It was. I didn't see the play, but, you know, it was a dry movie. And like I said, Tyler Perry movies are good, but to me, I know there's a lot of Tyler Perry fans out there going to be upset with me.
I think I know what you're about to say.
I just don't like all the buffoonery. You say what?
There is a lot of buffoonery. I have to say, what Tyler has done.
I just wish we would get away from that.
But see, you know what? Tyler has done something that has been marketable. Tyler has took his movies to a point where there is an element of hope and God in everything. And at some point in time, you have more able-bodied Christians than you have sinners in this world. And I think with Tyler Perry, you know, his movies are great. His movies are great. Do I think his shows stand up to them? Absolutely not. I think the only Tyler Perry show that stands accord to his movies is The Haves and the Have-Nots. He could cancel every other TV show he has on the air at this moment because none of them hold a candle to The Haves and the Have-Nots. But his movies, Tyler Perry, I think his first two movies, Tyler was true to himself. He was true to himself and true to his craft. I believe in which a lot of people have done it where when Hollywood says, well, look, you grossed $15 million doing it by yourself. You let us help you, you can gross $100 million. Okay, what do I have to do to get there? Sell out or be a fucking fool or use God and everything. And which there's nothing wrong with using God for any and every situation in this world. But I think Tyler Perry took his way out to Hollywood. He first started not wanting to be a sellout, not wanting to let his items be a commercial success. But what Tyler Perry has done, and which I have spoke about this before on several blog shows, Tyler Perry did a turnaround story. And I believe you were talking about it when I came on the air. A turnaround story is when you have the same elements in every single book. You grew up with no mother or no father, or your mother was a drunk or a prostitute, your father was a pimp or a drug dealer. Your mother either died at childbirth or your father died in jail or prison. You grew up as a teen. You were either extremely quiet and met someone who changed your life around, or you were extremely out there and grown and sassy and you met somebody who told you they were going to give you the life. Somehow you thought this person was going to change for you, but they didn't. Now we're at the end of the book, and you have a revelation. That's called a turnaround story. You're using the same elements, and you're building on a story with the same elements. That's what Tyler Perry is doing now. He's building on these very same stories. I still say, without a doubt, true to my heart, Tyler Perry, there's no Tyler Perry movie or series of movies that can hold a candle to Spike Lee in the 90s. Not a single one.
Right. Yeah.
Not a one.
Yeah.
Not a single one.
You're right.
Do the right thing by far.
The only movie I think that he has that done something to me, that gave me something, was what was the one about the family? It was called
Daddy's Little Girls, or was that Family Reunion?
No. It was
the
one
where
it was,
The Family That Plays?
The Family That Plays?
Yeah, that movie.
Was that the stage play? Oh, yeah. The movie, The Family That Plays, and that one. That is something.
That's why I think that's why he got his premise to do the Have and Have Nots from that, because it's the same kind of concept, I think.
It is.
Where you have this family that has all these different things going on. The black woman is stupid. She wants this white man, and you know, that's when Sanaa Lathan played the crazy wife that was into the son and all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a great movie, and it had a lot. It was so good to me that I didn't feel like it was a Tyler Perry movie.
It was good, but you know what a lot of people have said, and the weird part is that a lot of people said that most of Tyler Perry's best movies are not his stage plays. I think that was one of the only movies, because by far I still say Daddy's Little Girls was the best Tyler Perry movie that he ever put out.
With that.
That was the best. Yeah. That was never a stage play. And I think when you don't have a foundation to build off of, you can go from scratch. You can make it into anything you want. But when you base something off of something that's already out in the public, when you have a foundation that people already see, they expect you to deliver based on what you delivered either via a book or via a stage play. So with Daddy's Little Girls, he had no foundation. He built from scratch, and it was amazing. But building from your stage plays, people want to see it recreated. People want to see it brought to life. And
what was the name of the movie?
Of them. Yeah?
What was the name of the movie he did where the woman had a husband, and she left her husband for this rich other guy, and he used her?
The Marriage
Counselor.
She ended
up getting AIDS. What was it? Yeah,
the marriage counselor.
That's
okay.
The marriage counselor.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yep, that was garbage. That was garbage.
Exactly.
That was garbage.
And you know what's so strange? The stage play was phenomenal. But then again, after being in film school, I realized if you were to take out the singing, the beautiful songs, if you were to take out the singing, will that make sense? Prime example, Tyler Perry's Madea's Big Happy Family. That's the one with Loretta Devine, Bow Wow,
Teyana Taylor.
Teyana Taylor. Personally speaking, that was a phenomenal movie. Phenomenal. It drew you in, because if anybody is a mother and you have siblings that don't get along, and you know it's your dying wish to want to tell them, kids, I'm sick. I need you guys to stop and be together for each other, because mama not going to be here no more. And to not have that opportunity, it forces them to kind of band together. And it just took it to a plateau. The stage play was phenomenal. The movie, I don't know about y'all, but I cried. Especially when old girl was singing that song, Heaven Waits for Me. Boy, I was in that bitch boo, like, mama, no, Jesus. Wait a minute. My mom ain't died. She at home. Girl, close your damn eyes. Come on now. Wipe it up. But, I mean, it's phenomenal.
And this is the last little thing I'm going to say about Tyler Perry, and we'll let him go. But what was it? Good Deeds? Yeah, it was kind of cool. It had potential, but it just didn't do what I thought it was going to do.
I mean, it was a good story, but it was something totally different from what he normally does.
Was that something that came off the scratch too? That just flopped.
Yes.
Because it didn't.
Good Deeds Time came off the scratch. But before we end this Tyler Perry discussion, I will say, by far, Tyler Perry did amazing in Alex Cross. He ain't no Morgan Freeman. He ain't no Morgan Freeman now.
True.
But Tyler Perry did a damn good job.
That was him as an actor,
Cross.
Though. He didn't direct that movie or anything. That was him playing
and
a part in somebody else's
he
movie.
Needs to do. He needs to do more acting and let his writing go somewhere else. Because I'm about sick of Madea's ass. She's good for comedy, but I'm about sick of her ass.
Yeah, you know, the Browns and all that, it's just, I don't know. Anyway, you can only take so much of that buffoonery. But anyway, he's a good, I'm not taking from him. He's a good guy. He made it where he is. He's got the money. There's an audience. Just like in all the genres of writing that's out there, there's an audience. And, you know, whether it's good or bad, we can talk about it. People can give you bad reviews or good reviews. As long as you got somebody that's interested in to read what you got, all right, or watch what you have, you got an audience. So, you know, there's one thing I learned when you get these reviews, good and bad, you want to take them all, even though you don't want bad reviews, you want them as well. But just remember, with one bad review, there's three good ones. Somebody can read the same thing that you wrote, and one can say, oh, this was fucked up. Person B, oh, I just loved it. It was just absolutely magnificent. You know, it's amazing, but that's what it is.
You're absolutely correct.
We can't stop writing or doing what we love as long as we're trying to do it right and not just throw something out there just to get a whole bunch of books out there like some of these people are doing. They're putting these people out. And I don't know if they can write or not, but they want to have these publishing companies, and they want to have several authors out there, and they're putting them out there, and everything is the same. There's nothing different.
You're absolutely correct. And, you know, I mean, it all goes with talent, because if you don't have the talent as a basis, you know, you could fuck and buffoon your way to Hollywood all you want, but at the end of the day, when that money dries up, what do you have? Just an overfucked ass and a lot of buffoonery shit to look at. That's all.
Right.
Yep. It's amazing. But I don't know. I we've been talking about this last few shows. How can we make us as African Americans? Do we always have to have? You know, how can we portray ourselves in a better light to the world? Not just to white people, but to everybody look at us differently. Because even when you go to a black movie, there's always this flavor of it's got to be a comedy. The black woman is a strong woman, and she's so strong, the husband's scared of her and shit. You know, he's there, but he's scared that, well, my wife's going to do this to me. I mean, you know, we see this in every black movie. Like Why Did I Get Married? And all these movies, Tyler Perry again. But what I'm saying is, why does the man have to be looking like, oh, man, we got to let her do what she wants, because if we don't do it, she's going to get mad at me and she's going to kick me out of the house and, you know, all this stuff. Why does it have to be that? Why do we have to portray that to the world, that man, the black man is weak, and or if he is strong, he's beating the shit out of his woman, and she's this weakling and letting him do it. I mean, why does it have to be like that? Why can't we have a positive family? I mean, not perfect. I mean, still have issues, but why can't we have somebody that's living a life that's trying to do right for the, you know, just like the daddy's little girls? Why can't we have that? Why does it always have to be a portrayal of something negative? You know, I don't understand that.
Who wants to start off this discussion?
Oh, I can kick it off. Like, I was just waiting for anybody else who might have something to say.
Well, you go ahead and start it off, because I'm still marinating my brain. You go ahead, girl.
Because I can go ahead and kick that off, because something the other day, it was a video off of CNN, and there was a couple of different reporters, and there was a black guy, and there was a Spanish chick, and then there was David Banner on there. And they were talking about something that David Banner had said about the whole Mike Brown situation and the way that people view African Americans and whatever. And he kind of made a point. He said, you know, we devalue ourselves. And because we devalue ourselves and we don't see no value in our own, you know what I'm saying, people and our own being, then how do we expect other people to do the same thing? But my whole thing is, like, you know, I'm a Hispanic woman and I am raising biracial children because my kids are half black. So I have to prepare my kids, you know, for when they go out in the world and have them understand, like, because of the color of your skin, because of your race, because of this, because of that, there's going to be a lot of people unaccepting of you. You know what I mean? And
right.
My whole thing is if we as a people, because we've been beaten down so many different times, you know, during all these different years because of slavery and because of stereotypes and all this extra shit. I feel like we as a people, as, you know what I'm saying, blacks, Hispanics, and everybody else, we hold the majority right now. You know, and if we all got together peacefully and voice everything and let everybody know that, you know, we're not that stereotype. We are not what you guys think that we are. We are different. Just because you had an encounter with one person of whatever race, you know, just because that one person did whatever they did, you shouldn't punish the rest of us for what that one person did or whatever. You know, like,
we need to
take a stand and be a voice together. If we can't do it together, then they're going to continue to look at us like, y'all ain't shit. You know, I've heard so many people in my entire 31 years on this earth talk shit to me because I'm Mexican and Puerto Rican. You know, oh, you wet back this, you wet back that, you crossed the border, you ain't legal. All this extra shit that I've heard, and I'm like, no, I never crossed the border. Shit, I was born in Chicago. What the hell are you talking about? But you know what I'm saying? I've had people come at me like that, you know, or like the stereotypical thing about Hispanics is that we got a shitload of kids. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you guys have a whole bunch of kids. Okay, true enough. Yes, I do have 6 kids, but the reason why I have 6 kids is different from what the hell y'all think about. I'm not having my kids just so I can, you know, they, like, honestly, I've had people approach me thinking that the reason why I had all these kids is because I can be on welfare and some more shit. But my thing is, I'm not on welfare. I pay for everything,
you know,
that I got.
You can't even use,
you know,
that no more. That's 70s welfare.
But
when the more kids you have, the more shit you get.
But
that don't even work
anymore. But people still say that shit to me. They, like, they really think that. And I'm like, I'm not. I pay for everything that I, you know what I'm saying? I grind hard for me and mine. Nobody got to tell me shit about my kids. Or, like, the other stereotype, you got a whole bunch of different baby daddies. Okay, and how about little Jessica or little Amber or whatever, all these trailer trash bras that we think not doing all this. These bitches got 3, 4, and 5 baby daddies, too. So you can't just say it's black folks. You can't say it's just Hispanic folks.
Well, you know,
white girls
more people that's on welfare, they never look at it, but
it's more white people
on welfare than it is anybody. So
yeah.
I don't understand why they always say that. It's more trailer trash that's on welfare than it is blacks and Hispanics. But they want to always focus on us, just like with the weed and all this stuff, making it legal. The main reason they don't really want to make it legal is because they don't want us to get it. Or they're making so much money on it. You know, it's crazy. I understand what you're saying.
But my whole thing is if we all came together as one voice, if all the minorities came together as one voice, we can stand up to them and show all of their silly asses, hey, we're not all the same way. You can't categorize us no more. You can't stick us in a stereotype. You can't this or you can't that. We all need to be one voice, but we can't be one voice if everybody keeps putting each other down.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was just going to say, the crab mentality is keeping us from doing that.
Right.
You know, we too worried about somebody else going to have more books out than me and shit, you know. So we sell them for 99 cents because we want to get more sales. You know, shit like that. I mean, oh, she got a book out now. You know, stuff like that.
Saying,
you know?
Yeah. But like,
we have this issue. We're too busy trying to step on each other when there's plenty of people that read. There's so many people out there that read. Everybody should make some money, but you got motherfuckers that, well, you know, they get upset because they feel like, well, they books better than mine. I can't have that. I gotta have me this. You know, I gotta do that. So, you know, it's the mentality.
And that's why I don't.
And it's the Lynch, it's the Willie Lynch syndrome, and it's a whole bunch of things that's going on.
Yeah, like
but one thing we can't say is, even though there's still racism going on, because I'm in a state where it's really happening right now, Missouri, and Ferguson's
mm-hmm.
3 hours away from me. Still, the thing is, you know, racism just looks a different way. It's never left. It just comes at us differently.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can sit here and still blame the white man for things or blame people for that or whatever. But we got to look at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We've got racism within our own race, light-skinned, dark-skinned, that's been going on forever. And a lot of that comes from what they implanted in us from the Willie Lynch time. Because if you ever read that letter, you'll read. He put out that all you got to do is keep them fighting against each other, light-skinned, dark-skinned, this, and we don't have to worry about them, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's still working today.
Yeah, and you're right.
So,
like, I see plenty of shit, and I've asked a couple of people using just, like, personal shit when I would do, like, papers and stuff for college or whatever.
Right.
And they would say, pick a controversial topic and talk about it. So, you know what I'm saying? I pick the light skin versus dark skin, and I'm like, what's the difference? Because to me, beautiful is beautiful. I don't give a shit what color you are. You know, like, perfect example. I love black men. You know what I'm saying? My husband is black. He's chocolate. I think that shit is fucking beautiful. You know what I'm saying? But I've had, my first husband was about, you know what I'm saying, bright as me. I love all colors. It doesn't matter. But everybody was like,
I like the way Spike Lee portrayed it in school days. It was beautiful. Excellent.
Yeah.
You know, like
mm-hmm.
you said, Spike Lee was off the chain in his time. And his opinion that he had when he said about Tyler Perry with the buffoonery and stuff was okay. I don't, and a lot of people try to make it sound like he was being jealous and he was upset because his movies is doing something now, and it's not even that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it was portrayed that way. So you know, I'm not even gonna get into that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, you know, people are buying that shit now, so that's what they want to see. You know, somebody else will come along later and overpower
mm-hmm.
that. And, you know, as long as we keep making that kind of stuff and they see us in that, then they know that we're not going to do much because we're still laughing. And they're coming to our movies and laughing, too. But the movies ain't making it to no damn getting the Oscar nominations and nothing like that, though, are they?
Right.
But they'll come and they'll laugh, you know, and it's funny how Steve Harvey pointed out that a lot of these movies, they'll sell you a ticket for a black movie, but then they'll turn around and give the sale to a white movie, so the white movie will look like it did more than the black movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're turning the sales differently than what was really, you know, out there, because they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, if Tyler Perry sets up the old Army base down there, Fort McPherson, to make it to a black Hollywood, that's fine to a point, but I just don't know. You know, I mean, I wish him well on it, but, you know, is it going to be better? Or is it still going to be the crab mentality? Or what? I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But we got 11 minutes left, and what I want to do is give you both a chance to tell people how to get your books and tell people how they can get you if they want to get you to do a book signing and you know, how they can contact you. So we'll start out with Divine Six, and then we'll let Draka come in.
Okay, I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Authors Divine Six. I'm on Twitter at Authors Divine. You can email me at authorsdivine6@gmail.com. I'm doing a book signing here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, October the 11th. I'm working on an all-woman book tour with Rashida, who is one of my label mates from Jada Publications, Rashida Williams. She did A Love-Hate Thing and Club Nirvana 3. So if anybody wants to get up with me, you know, that's just hit any one of those, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm always on there.
I should try to come. My daughter lives in Fayetteville. I actually retired out of the military at Fort Bragg. So I got some time there in Fort Bragg. I know a little bit about the Merc and all that stuff. So, you know, you know, do they still have those little restaurants that have all this soul food going on, or they stop doing all that chitlins?
They got a couple of them left.
But yeah, I did some time down there. We got out the Army in 2001. I was there at Fort Bragg. But I wish I could come down because I need to see my grandkids. I got grandkids right there in Fayetteville. So,
well,
but Drake,
well, we're having an all day show.
August, you said, when is it?
No, we're having an all day, well, it's not all day, but it's an event from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. and it's on Merchant Road right across the street from Fayetteville.
October 11th.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, Miss Draker.
All right. Well, actually, that same weekend, I'll be in Atlanta at the BAWA Book Fest in Atlanta at the Convention Center. That's October 11th, Saturday. Come check it out. I'm going to have great prizes. You can also find me at Facebook/AuthorDrekaArmstrong or Twitter, Drekar Armstrong, my website, www.drekararmstrong.com. Be sure to check out my blog on the Drekar Armstrong YouTube channel. This week's blog, Friday, will be about the lies that the cartoons have spread to our youth. I will be calling Winnie the Pooh out on being a pedophile. We're going to talk about that. And I'm also...
Well,
a whole blog.
You know, Bullwinkle was my favorite cartoon back in the day, and that was before its time, and definitely all the Warner Brothers. They were definitely before their time and some of the things they did. Not Warner Brothers,
yeah.
But I mean, I'm talking about, like, Bugs Bunny and all them, you know. Bugs Bunny would turn gay in 5 seconds real fast on you. He'll turn into a female in a minute, real quick. But anyway, let me go ahead and say what I got going on. I have on the 28th of, which is next Thursday, 28th of August, I'm doing a book signing here in Kansas City. It's going to be at the Broadway Jazz Club on 3601 Broadway Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. And it's going to be from 6 to 8. I'm going to be doing a Morris After Dark there. And we'll be – and actually, that's my birthday weekend because Labor Day is my birthday. So we'll be kicking it off that Thursday
Happy
night
birthday.
And going from that. Yeah, and going on through. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm trying to get some more things going in the future as well. I'm going to try to start going to some of these book – these conferences as well so I can be seen. You know, a lot of people go to these conferences and they get out there, and that's good. But a lot of times, you know, I hate going sometimes because they try to treat you, if you're not a mainstream author, it's like you ain't shit sometimes. They put you in the back. They don't want your booth in the front with the rest of them. And, you know, sometimes you might get love, sometimes you don't. It depends on how well they want to bring you in. But, you know, I wish you well on that. I guess, is that where Victoria or Christopher Murray and all them is going to be at that weekend?
I don't know, but I believe that they are. I hope
you
so.
Said
I
it's the AA.
Like
what is it? What is it? The
UBA. It's the UBAWA. They were supposed to have it in New York, but it'll be in Atlanta this year. So I'll be there, and then
I don't know if
after
be
that, I graduate. But before
I've met
we
them,
all
so.
Go, they're pretty cool people. Yes, but they're real cool. Before
I know,
we all
I know,
go,
I know them. Yeah.
I have to say, I have been trying to get a challenge together. Now, I know everybody has seen the ice bucket challenges for ALS. What I have been proposing for authors is that 10 authors from each state nominate authors within that state to do the challenge and or donate money. And then once your 10 is done, you nominate another state. And somebody from that state has to pick it up. You can nominate whoever. So I'm trying to get some people to start doing it. I want to see hopefully we can try to help. That ice bucket challenge, now is the time to do it because it's hot as hell outside. Don't wait until wintertime and start doing this damn challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be in the hospital with all type of pneumonia in your ass.
I guess you can put it out there, but I hate for somebody to say, Red Snapper, I want you to do it, and I'll be like, oh, hell, shit.
You know,
anyway.
Well, you know if I'm nominated, right? You know if I'm nominated, I'm nominating you too, right? Just so you know, I'm nominating you and a couple of people. Trust me.
I don't mind donating, but I just don't want that damn ice on me, man. But anyway, I guess if it comes, I'll have to do it. But we'll see. We'll see. And that's a good idea. I appreciate you. Go ahead and get that, you know, kind of going, and we'll see what happens with it. And
most definitely.
I thank you both for coming on the show. I appreciate you taking time out of your own schedules. And I hope Divine Six, you didn't get – You were down to earth with this, and see,
no, never that.
Because we don't play on this show. We let you be yourself. We let you do what you need to do to tell about your craft, and we also give instruction and we learn. You know, and you can always come back once you've been on the show once. You can always come back. Just let me know when you got a new book coming out or whatever, or if you just want to come on. All you got
to
do is just let me know.
To Drekar, I just sent her a request on Facebook, so I don't know if you got it or not. But I think
okay.
Yeah, let me see.
Brittany, you need to come on back. Let me know what's going on. Now you're in the film business and stuff. I need to be working with you because I want to make Scandalous Motives into a real movie, but I need some real help with the screenplay. I got it almost finished, but I want you to kind of go over it and make sure it's those things, those elements you were talking about feelings and stuff like that. I got to make sure I go over it again and make sure those things aren't there because, like you said, people can't see those. The actor has to be able to present that. So with that being said, I'm definitely going to be working with you in the future on that, and I trust you.
Of course you do.
Shit you've been through. Well, I do trust you because, you know, there's
some things
that...
Of course you do,
that,
Sexy Reed.
Yeah,
because
some of the things that... some of the things that you say and been through, I know, and we haven't heard no more from that Arthur anymore, the one that tried to screw you, so...
She be all right, but what would you do for a Klondike bar? How much do you really need me to help you? What would
exactly.
you do for a Klondike bar?
Right. Well, we'll see. We'll talk about it because I don't want to say nothing on the air and get myself in trouble. So we'll work on it. Well, ladies, we thank you for having me on the show. We're going to go ahead and cut it here.
Thank you.
You know, anytime you want to come back, all you got to do is just let me know and just inbox me. And for those that's listening, hope you enjoyed the show. And DB had to go. It was an emergency that happened. He had to get out and found out some bad news. So he texted me and let me know. So that's the reason why he's not here anymore. But we're going to go on, and we're going to enjoy the rest of our evening. So thank you very much, ladies, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.